Merry meeting, blessed be. Welcome one and all to the Spiral Dance.
Come on.
Mary Muted, welcome to this week's edition of The Spiral Dance. I'm Hawthorne, and I'm very happy you could join me. We were just listening to Pink Floyd doing Fearless. And in honor of April Fool's Day, our theme this week is The Trickster and the Fool. We're going to look at the history of April Fool's Day, as well as the role that the fool and the trickster play in earth-based religious practices. We're going to hear from Joseph Campbell and his thoughts on the trickster mythology, and also a quick look at the fool archetype in literature and myth. And I'm going to have the Spiral Dance Spell of the Week towards the end of the show. I'm not kidding. That's all for you this week. Right now, here is Johnny Winter with Be Careful with a Fool here on the Spiral Dance with Hawthorne.
Be careful with a fool.
Yeah, so we're talking about April 1st, the Trickster and the Fool this week on the Spiral Dance. April Fool's Day is celebrated every year on the first day of April as a day when people play practical jokes and hoaxes on each other. The jokes and their victims are known as April Fools. Popular since the 19th century, the day is not a national holiday in any country, but it's well known in Canada, Europe, Australia, Brazil, and the United States. In the Middle Ages, New Year's Day was celebrated on Lady Day, also known as the Christian Feast of the Annunciation, on the March the 25th in most of Europe. The feast's octave was April 1st. Now, octave has two senses in Christian liturgical usage. In the first sense, it's the eighth day after the feast. The word is derived from the Latin octava, or eighth, with dies, or day. In the second sense, the term is applied to the whole period of those 8 days during which certain major feasts came to be observed. April Fool's Day may have originated in France as part of a shift to celebrating New Year's on the first day of January. Some historians have said that April Fools appeared earlier in Chaucer's writings, but this is now generally discounted. In the Canterbury Tales of 1392, the Nun's Priest tale is set, quoting, "Sin March began 30 days in two." Now, this was originally agreed to mean the 1st of April. However, modern scholars believe that there's a copying error in the manuscripts, and Chaucer actually wrote, "Sin March was gone." Thus, the passage originally meant 32 days after March, i.e., the 2nd of May, the anniversary of the engagement of King Richard II of England to Anne of Bohemia, which took place in 1381. In 1508, French poet Blois d'Amiral referred to a poisson d'avril, or April Fool, literally April Fish, a possible reference to the holiday. In 1539, Flemish poet Edward the Dane wrote of a nobleman who sent his servants on foolish errands on the 1st of April. In 1686, John Aubrey referred to the holiday as Fool's Holy Day, the first British reference. On April the 1st, 1691, several people were tricked into going to the Tower of London to see the lions washed. Some precursors of April Fool's Day include the Roman festival of the Holaria, or the Holy Festival of India, and the medieval Feast of Fools. The Romans took this feast originally from the Greeks, who called it Ascensus. The term Holaria seems originally to have been a name which was given to any day or season of rejoicing. The Holaria were therefore, according to Maximus Monachus, either private or public. If celebrated privately, it could be a reference to the day on which a person got married or when a son was born. The public Holarias were those days of public rejoicings, as applied to a new emperor. Such days were devoted to general rejoicings and public sacrifices, and no one was allowed to show any symptoms of grief or sorrow. But the Romans also celebrated a Holaria on the 25th of March, the eighth day before the calends of April, in honor of Cybele, the mother of the gods. The day of this celebration was the first after the vernal equinox. The winter with its gloom had died, and the first day of a better season was spent rejoicing. The manner of its celebration during the time of the Republic is unknown, except that Valerius Maximus mentions games in honor of the mother of the gods. We learn from Herodian that, among other things, there was a solemn procession in which the statue of the goddess is carried, and before the statue were carried, the most costly specimens of template and works of art belonging either to wealthy Romans or to the emperors themselves. All kinds of games and amusements were allowed on this day. Masquerades were the most prominent among them, and everyone might, in his disguise, imitate whomsoever he liked, even the magistrates.
Oh,
In mythology and in the study of folklore and religion, a trickster is a god, a goddess, a spirit, a man, a woman, or an anthropomorphic animal who exhibits a great degree of intellect or secret knowledge and uses it to play tricks or otherwise disobey normal rules and conventional behavior. It's suggested that the term trickster was probably first used in this context by Daniel G. Brinton in 1885. The trickster deity breaks the rules of the gods or nature, sometimes maliciously, but usually with ultimately positive effects, though the trickster's initial intentions may have been either positive or negative. Often, the bending or breaking of rules takes the form of tricks or thievery. Tricksters can be cunning or foolish or both. They are often funny, even when considered sacred or performing important cultural tasks. An example of this is the sacred Iktomi of the Sioux legends, whose role is to play tricks and games, and by doing so, raises awareness of the axe as an equalizer. In several cultures, as may be seen in Greek, Norse, or Slavic folktales, along with Native American lore, the trickster and the culture hero are often combined. Prometheus, in Greek mythology, stole fire from the gods to give to humans. He is more of a cultural hero than a trickster. In many Native American mythologies, the coyote in the southwestern United States, or the raven in the Pacific Northwest and Russian Far East, stole fire from the gods, or the stars, or the moon, and or the sun, and they're more tricksters than culture heroes. This is primarily because of other stories involving these spirits. Prometheus was a titan, whereas the coyote spirit and the raven spirit are usually seen as jokesters and pranksters. Some other examples of tricksters in the world mythologies include Mercurius in Roman mythology, Hermes in Greek mythology, Eshu in Yoruba mythology, to name just a few. It's been observed that the trickster is nearly always a male figure. However, frequently the trickster exhibits gender and form variability, changing gender roles and even occasionally engaging in same-sex practices. Such figures are said to have a two-spirit nature. Loki, the Norse trickster, exhibits gender variability in one story by becoming pregnant. Loki was forced by the gods to stop a giant from erecting a wall for them before 7 days passed. He solved the problem by transforming into a mare and drawing the giant's magical horse away from its work. He returned sometime later with a child he had given birth to, the eight-legged horse Sleipnir, who served as Odin's steed. In some cultures, there are dualistic myths featuring two culture heroes arranging the world in a complementary manner. The two heroes may compete or collaborate. They may be conceived as neutral or contrasted as good versus evil, may be of the same importance or distinguished as powerful versus weak. They may be brothers, even twins, or not be relatives at all. The tricks Jacob plays on his twin brother Esau, his father Isaac, and his father-in-law Laban are immoral by conventional standards, designed to cheat other people and gain material or social advantages that he is not entitled to. Nevertheless, the biblical narrative clearly takes Jacob's side, and the reader is invited to laugh and admire Jacob's ingenuity, as is the case with tricksters of other cultures. The coyote mythos is one of the most popular in Western Native American cultures. In creation myths, coyote appears as the creator himself, but he may at the same time be the messenger, the culture hero, the trickster, the fool, the clown. He also has the ability of the transformer. In some stories, he is a handsome young man, in others he is an animal, yet others present him as a sacred power. According to Crow and other Plains traditions, Old Man Coyote impersonates the creator. Quoting, "Old Man Coyote took up a handful of mud and out of it made people," unquote. His creative power is also spread onto words. Quoting, "Old Man Coyote named buffalo, deer, elk, antelopes, and bear, and all these came into being," unquote. In such myths, coyote creator is never mentioned as an animal. More, he can meet his animal counterpart, the coyote. They address each other as elder brother and younger brother, and they walk and talk together. According to anthropologist A. Holtzkrantz, the impersonation of coyote as creator is a result of a taboo, a mythic substitute to the religious notion of the Great Spirit whose name is too dangerous and or sacred to use apart from at special ceremonies. In other stories, the coyote is purely a clown that entertains. However, he usually ends up tricking people and sometimes stealing from them. The trickster or the clown is an example of a Jungian archetype. In modern literature, the trickster survives as a character archetype, not necessarily supernatural or divine, sometimes no more than a stock character. Often, too, the trickster is distinct in a story by his acting as a sort of catalyst, in that his antics are the cause of other characters' discomfiture, but he himself is left untouched. In later folklore, the trickster or the clown is incarnated as a clever, mischievous man or creature who tries to survive the dangers and challenges of the world using trickery and deceit as a defense. He also is known for entertaining people as a clown does. For example, many typical fairy tales have the king who wants to find the best groom for his daughter by ordering several trials. No brave and valiant prince or knight manages to win them until a poor and simple peasant comes. With the help of his wits and cleverness, instead of fighting, he evades or fools monsters and villains and dangers with unorthodox manners. Therefore, the most unlikely candidate passes the trials and receives the reward. More modern and obvious examples of that are Bugs Bunny and Pippi Longstocking. Br'er Rabbit is a trickster character who succeeds through his wits rather than through strength. Modern African-American literary criticism has turned the trickster figure into one example of how it is possible to overcome a system of oppression from within. In his writings of the late 1980s, Henry Louis Gates Jr. presents the concept of signifying. In this theory is the idea that the master's house can be dismantled using the tools if the tools are used in a new and conventional way. Br'er Rabbit is the creative way that the slave community responded to the oppressor's failure to address them as human beings. Br'er Rabbit is the hero with a fragile body but a deceptively strong mind that allows him to create his own symbols in defiance of the perverted logic of the oppressor. By twisting language to create these symbols, Br'er Rabbit not only uses the personification of the ethic of self-preservation for the slave community, but also an alternative response to their oppressor's false doctrine of anthropology. Through his language of trickery, Br'er Rabbit outwits his oppressors, deconstructing in small ways the hierarchy of subjugation to which the weak body forces him to physically conform. While the trickster crosses various cultural traditions, there are significant differences between tricksters in the traditions of many indigenous peoples and those of many native traditions held clowns and tricksters as essential to any contact with the sacred. People could not pray until they had laughed, because laughter opens and frees from rigid preconception. Humans had to have tricksters within the most sacred ceremonies for fear that they forget the sacred comes through upset, reversal, and surprise. The trickster in most native traditions is essential to creation and to birth. One of the most important distinctions is that we can see in the Native American trickster an openness to life's multiplicity and paradoxes largely missing in the modern Euro-American moral tradition. In some stories, the Native American trickster is foolish and other times wise. He can be a hero in one tale and a villain in the next.
there's a figure in American Indian myth that represents this power of the dynamic of the total psyche to overthrow programs. This is the negative aspect, and it's called a trickster. It's a very, very important figure in American Indian mythologies. In the East, in the forest lands of the Northeast and the Southeast, it's the great hare, a rabbit. When you go west of the Mississippi in the plains lands, it's coyote. You get up in the Northwest coast and it's raven. These are smart, clever birds and animals. Now, it's a great puzzler to well-trained Christians to come across the trickster hero, because he's both a kind of devil and fool and the creator of the world. And so he comes in as an upsetting factor. He breaks through. He even breaks through the notion of what a deity ought to be. And this, I think, is about as good an example as you can find anywhere of the trickster hero. Now, that trickster trait turns up in deities like Yahweh. Yahweh's a trickster. He lets people build a building, and then because it gets to be three stories high, he afraid it's going to wreck heaven, and he comes down and floods the world. That's a trickster stunt. That's a ridiculous act. And we think it quite normal for a deity to behave that way. If a human being behaved that way, we'd send him to a lunatic asylum. And here you have the deity coming through as the trickster, as the destroyer, as the disruptor of programs. Yahweh's full of this kind of thing. Well, the coyote stories are really great. There's a rather amusing one. Oh, well, to start, I suppose the most important myth associated with this trickster is that of the flood. The American Indian floods, the story will start with all the animals on a raft with Old Man, who is a humanized aspect of Coyote, among them. And he sends after a certain time, he sends a diving animal down, a muskrat or a diving bird or a loon or something like that, to get a little piece of mud out of the water and bring it up. Now, this motif we find in American Indian stories of the diver who brings up the mud, and then Old Man takes it and puts it on the water and makes some magic, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and then he sends a fox or something to run around the world and see if it's big enough, and on the third or fourth time it's big enough, and there we are. Now, in this theme of the Old Man on the raft appears in Siberia, northern Siberia, among the Chukchi or the Finns even, and the Laps, most people in the north. The shadow of God is this negative figure. And the deity sends a diver down. This is known as the earth diver motif. And he comes up with a little bit of mud, but he doesn't give it all to the deity. And after the deity has put the mud down and made a perfectly orderly world, then this other one spits out the rest of the mud, and that makes mountains and difficulties and everything of that kind.
Psychologist Carl Gustav Jung used the concept of archetype in his theory of the human psyche. He believed that universal mythic characters, archetypes, reside within the collective unconscious of people the world over. Archetypes represent fundamental human motifs of our experience as we evolved. Consequently, they evoke deep emotions. Although there are many different archetypes, Jung defined 12 primary types that symbolize basic human motivations. Each type has its own set of values, meanings, and personality traits. Also, the 12 types are divided into three sets of four, namely ego, soul, and self. The types in each set share a common driving source. For example, types within the ego are driven to fulfill ego-defined agendas. Most, if not all, people have several archetypes at play in their personality construct. However, one archetype tends to dominate the personality in general. It can be helpful to know which archetypes are at play in yourself and others, especially your loved ones, your friends, your co-workers, in order to gain some personal insight into their behaviors and their motivations. So let's look at the Jungian archetype known as the Fool. First of all, don't assume that fool is interchangeable with stupid. While some fool characters may be stupid, that's not the essence of the character. People can be often very silly in certain aspects of their life, but still smart enough to know how to handle very practical matters. And don't assume that the fool's sole function is comic relief. Comic relief is rarely the only reason they exist in a story. Jung believed that the primary function of the fool is to represent optimism. In this, the fool represents an important aspect of the hero. Heroes tend to be cautious, even reluctant, and they may be plagued with self-doubt. The fool represents the part of the hero that wants to press on in spite of any fear or doubts that they may have about doing so. Fools also represent innocence. As well as a foil for the hero, the fool can be a foil for the antagonist because their innocence is the counterpoint to the antagonist's corruption. Antagonists may fear fool characteristics more than heroes because they're afraid of the incorruptible. Fool characters tend to be astonishingly lucky. They may be lucky even when they're utterly incompetent. Fools may leave a trail of destruction in their wake without ever meaning to. Unlike the trickster archetype, fools rarely cause harm intentionally, and they don't take pleasure in the idea of causing trouble. In fact, if anyone bothers to accuse them of causing harm, their reaction most likely will be to surprise and dismay. They'll either live in denial or try to make up for it and inadvertently cause even more destruction. The destruction can have a negative outcome or a positive one. In spite of causing havoc, fools can be a last resort for problems the main characters can't solve. Fools are also capable of acts of heroism. Fools can be a sounding board for the protagonist and or a way for characters to convey exposition. Because of their open manner, other characters tend to trust and confide in them.
Well, we know where we're going, but we don't know. And we know what we're knowing, but we can't say what we've seen. And we're not little children, and we know what we want. And the future is certain. Give us time to work it out.
Yeah.
Okay, and that was Talking Heads with Road to Nowhere. We also heard Joseph Campbell talking about the mythology of the trickster. That's available on YouTube. Joseph Campbell is always so interesting. He's got plenty of really interesting things to share, too. We also heard from the Ticks doing We're Girls, and we started this week's set off with... Oh, no, we heard Bow Wow Wow doing Chihuahua, and we started this week's set off with Johnny Winter doing Be Careful with a Fool. Now it's time for this week's Spiral Dance Spell of the Week, and this week's Spiral Dance Spell of the Week is for Wednesday, the 3rd of April, and this is called the Yield to Impulse Spell, you fool. So during Aries, while Mars rules the sun, you may feel energized and ready to begin new projects. Yield to the impulse. This is an excellent time for new beginnings. So ask yourself, what have you been putting off? Put it off no longer. Make sure that your plans are fairly well thought out, of course. Try to temper your excitement with common sense. Today, get out any noisemakers that you have, drums, whistles, horns, or even a kitchen pot and a big spoon. Play your instrument. Move your body, shout, clap your hands, stomp, be energetic. You are making noise to birth your new projects. So, speak this affirmation. I am excited about all beginnings and possibilities. I take a step forward. I look carefully at my path, anticipating any problem. I see all clearly. I move towards my goals with energy and wisdom. I say it and I make it so. Okay, that was offered by Lucy Sophia Zane. It appeared in the 2006 Witch's Spell a Day Almanac. So if you're foolish enough to give that spell a try, send me an email. Tell me all about it. RadioHawthorne@yahoo.com. Spiral Dance with Hawthorne. Here is the Gypsy Nomads with House of Cards.
Pinched behind. just high.
Okay, Gypsy Nomads from their CD, Happy Madness, and we heard House of Cards. That's going to do it for me for this week. I want to thank you for joining me. I had a great time talking about tricksters and fools. And I'll be back again next week with a brand new show. Until then, merry part, till merry meet again. Blessed be.